Now we're up to the final session of today, which is our standard session with the Q&A with the Office for Disability. So Michael Cromie is standing behind me, and I'll just hand the microphone over to you, Michael.
Hi everyone, I'm Michael Cromie from Office for Disability and Department of Health and Human Services, and I'm very, very excited to see Noble Tabe just arrive. I was going to have to do some filling, some tap dancing and stuff like that, but
you can continue.
Yeah, it might be. I just wanted to mention briefly before I introduce Noble that from the Department of Health and Human Services area, the State Disability Plan survey questionnaire is out at the moment, and I know definitely the Victorian Disability Advocacy Sector has been really providing that out to all their networks, and really appreciate that. We've got a few more weeks on that to go. I think it's the 6th or 7th of November when that closes. It's a 6-monthly questionnaire that provides us with really, really useful information to try to change policy directions around whole of government barriers, whole of Victorian community barriers that are facing people with a disability. So one last shameless plug for you and or your networks to go into that survey and fill it out. And I think we've had something like 600 or 700 respondees so far to this survey, which is comparable to the previous ones that we've run. We really appreciate that. Again, you're supporting that. It's fantastic. And give it one more plug and see if we can get a lot more responses, because it does actually help us in guiding the way in which we can talk to other government departments about some of the barriers that still exist in Victoria. So I'll just now introduce Noble Tabe, who is the Acting Director of the National Disability Insurance Scheme Reform Area, so within Victorian Government, that is assisting in the policy development around the NDIS reform. So Noble, we just have Mary Mallett speaking about some of the issues around the information linkages and capacity building framework. I guess from a Victorian perspective, it'd be great if you could touch on some of that. But yeah, I'd like to welcome Noble Tabe, who's only been in the job for a very, very short time, and we really appreciate your time today, Noble, so thanks.
Thank you. Thanks very much. And I'm really glad to be here, even though I'm only in the job for a very short time, but I do have a very long history in disability in Victoria, probably over 25 years, and do see some of the familiar faces here. So very happy to just give you an update of a very significant historic, I think sometimes that's the word they use, in terms of the signing of the bilateral agreement. So I'm just going to quickly give you an overview about what's covered in that agreement and what's to come. But more importantly, I just probably want to use the opportunity in terms of a bit of a dialogue, because it is a very big reform in Victoria, but also nationwide. So I'm sure we, as much as we try, and the staff working are very committed, but we probably haven't worked out exactly the details. And I'm sure Commonwealth would say the same thing. So we'll probably use the opportunity, give you an update, but also happy to field some question where I can and have the information to provide, very happy to. Where I don't, I'm also very happy to actually jot it down, and so that we can actually get onto the list of the issue or the question that we have to work through. So I'm not quite sure how many of you were in MCG. I think this is probably a few weeks ago now. It's on the 16th of September, just to test my memory, that's right, 16th of September 2015, Premier Andrew, Daniel Andrews, was in Canberra with the Prime Minister. I think it was a brand new Prime Minister the next day, and also with the New South Wales Premier, and together it signed the bilateral agreement in terms of the National Disability Insurance Scheme. So it was a very, significant moment in history, I suppose, and some of the things that got equated to in terms of the significance will be like the Medicare reform when it was introduced, or like the superannuation. So it really moved to disability from a if you like, you know, a welfare services to actually an insurance scheme. So I think one of the things that everyone will be very pleased to hear that is access to services will no longer be, when it's fully implemented, to be driven by waiting lists and availability of services or availability of funding. So basically, all the people that who are eligible for the scheme in accordance with the criteria, they'll be able to go to NDIA and get their, if you like, eligibility assessed. And if they are eligible, they'll be able to get a plan developed, and out of that plan will identify the resources and the support that they will need to manage their day-to-day situation. So I think that's probably a very welcome change in people who either use the disability services or even staff and workers who work in the system. That's a very significant welcome changes in terms of no longer what we call a ration system, depends on waiting list, depends on funding, is actually moved to an insurance scheme, a bit like Medicare. So in terms of the bilateral agreement, the significant things is in Victoria, we already had Barwon in terms of the trial probably a couple of years ago, but the bilateral agreement will actually confirm the rollout schedule for Victoria. For the remaining, which is the big part of the state, it will start in what we call the northeast Melbourne area in July 2016, followed very quickly by Central Highland, which is the Ballarat area, in January 2017, and then progressively the others come on, and the whole of Victoria will actually fully transition onto NDIS by July 1st, 2019. So as you can imagine, that's quite a significant, you know, rollout and organizing to do in the space of literally 3 years from July 16 to about July 19. So everyone in Victoria who is eligible will be, you know, moving on to NDIS during that 3 years. The sequence that we got a website, which I haven't got it right with me, but we will be able to, you know, send it to you, got the entire rollout schedule area by area. As I said, the first two are NEMA and Northeast Melbourne area and the Central Highland, and then followed by others. In terms of the rollout sequence, we still have a lot of details to work out, but in order to make sure the people that who really need the services will get to receive the services ASAP in terms of the rollout schedule, is in each of the geographic area, the people that will move onto NDIS first are the people that who are on the waiting list. So the people that are already receiving existing state funder system, they will continue to do so, but we'll let all the waiting list, people on the waiting list, to get onto NDIS first, because then that means they get their plan done, they get their resource allocated, and they can actually go on to purchase. So that's, you know, the in each of the area, the sequence is the waiting list people, and then will be followed by the people that who are already receiving state-funded services. And also across the state, the people that who are on the most urgent list on the ACCUS and the Disability Support Register, they will also transition to NDIS in the first 2 years of that three. So as you can see, the logic is we try to get the waiting list people who are currently waiting for services to get on first, and then followed by the people that who actually are already receiving services. Probably just go back in terms of the whole scheme. By the full scheme, there will be $5.1 billion will be invested in Victoria in terms of NDIS. And out of that, I think roughly is $2.5 billion is the funding from the state, and then the remaining from the Commonwealth through the Medicare levy. So it's a very, very big expansion during that time, not just in dollar terms, but also in terms of services. As you can imagine, when there's dollars, more dollars flow to people to buy and purchase the system, purchase the services, there will need to be more providers, and more importantly, there will need to be more workers. So at the moment, some of the initial projection that is being done is to say Victoria, in terms of the disability workforce, will double by 2019. So I think at the moment it's about 24,000. So this will project to grow into 48,000 when the scheme is fully operational in Victoria. And the other very important distinction from the current system is at the moment, Victoria is probably in a slightly advanced stage in a sense that, you know, individualized funding package or funding is a very well practiced concept in Victoria for quite some time, probably for the last decade. But NDIS is entirely operating a very, very big part is operating on that individualized funding approach. So as I said, people will go to NDIA and get assessed. And get assessed, and if they're eligible, they will have a plan developed. And then they will have a resource attached with that plan. So from the state perspective, what we need to work to is when we progressively transition to NDIS, say when we get to the NEMA area, some of the existing funding will need to get rolled in to go on to the Commonwealth to fund the scheme. So that's quite a, a big exercise to organise in terms of Victorian contribution to be able to go into the NDIS pool to fall to each of the area as they develop the services. And also similarly, on NDIS operate on a concept that is no longer the government buying the services for the people that who need the services. It very much on the principle of choice and control of the NDIS participants. That means the person with a disability will have a plan and will have a resource allocation, and then out of that, they will go to purchase whatever that they actually identify in that plan. So we will no longer say, oh, well, the government will fund, just say, 10 houses in scope, and then we'll try to vacancy management and put people in there. So when the scheme fully operational, and this will take quite some time, people will say, well, I need accommodation and support, and I got this money allocated for NDIS. So I might go to what we call registered provider and say, I'm actually interested to purchase in terms of whether attendant care or whatever from you out of the price that's set by NDIS, but is using my individualized package dollar to purchase that. And if I don't like that next year, I might decide I want to go to someone else and using the same money to purchase the services that I need. Or my needs might change. I might no longer need something, but now need something else. So if you like, the choice and control is entirely rest with the participant that who actually use the services. So I think that's quite a significant shift in thinking and in the way that we actually operate in terms of, so we will no longer be government funding the services and then we try to match people into services. People will actually have total control and choice. Now, of course, that comes with particular challenge, and I think some of the information linkages issue are tied to that because it will take a while for people to actually transition into that way of understanding that they actually have the choice and control. And also, more importantly, we got to have enough provider in the sector so that people truly have choice, because if you only got one provider, you don't have much choice because you've got no one else you can actually purchase the services from. So as you can imagine, there is a very significant piece, actually not just A, it's many significant pieces of work to try to get both the participant ready in terms of understanding that they have that choice and control, and supporting them to have the choice and control, which I think some of the advocacy group will come in, play a very significant role in doing that. And also, we've got to organise the provider to get ready to adjust to that, because the provider won't be getting a monthly funding check from the government. They will need to bill the NDIA because Noble actually used X amount of our services for the last month, and therefore they will need to send a bill to the NDIA, who actually use that money that out of my package to pay for those services. So there's quite a lot of adjustment, both in terms of the people that who are using the services, the provider that who are providing the services, and more importantly, as I said, if we're going to double the workforce, we really need to think how we're actually going to make sure that we still have a skilled and committed workforce to continue to provide the services, as well as to meet the demand of the growth in services. It's not a long time to try to make sure that we have 24,000 skilled, committed worker who will continue to work in the disability sector. So that's probably some of the challenge that, you know, we can't say we are there, but we're definitely working with both the provider, the participants, the advocacy group, and the peak body, trying to, put in the strategy to try to get there. So anticipate that by 2019, there will be about 105,000 in Victoria who will be in the, NDIS in the scheme. That 105 probably make up of 76,000 who are currently already using disability or mainstream services. The other component that I also should mention is for the quality and safeguard, Commonwealth ultimately does have a responsibility in terms of developing a national system about the quality and safeguard. And at the moment, they're not quite there. So what the bilateral agreement outline is, Victoria will, during the next 3 years as the transition, to maintain the current quality and safeguard, and it will actually administrate that on behalf of the Commonwealth. So there's a terminology called what we call in-kind support in terms of the funding. So that's one of the components Victoria will do, is the Victorian Department of Health and Human Services will continue to manage the quality and the safeguard components. So some of the things in there are like, at the moment, people need to be registered with the department in order to be able to provide disability services. That's part of the requirement of the Disability Act. So that means that we'll stay in the next 3 years, and as new provider come on, Victoria will actually register them. And so they become registered provider, then they can actually put their hands up and say, we can provide services to the participant. So, and also some of the other quality and existing safeguard that currently in disability services, like the Disability Service Commissioner, like the DWES scheme, the Disability Worker Exclusion Scheme, some of those will remain for the next 3 years, with the intention that by 2019, the Commonwealth will be able to develop, you know, a national framework in terms of quality and safeguard. I think I probably cover the main thing. So it's quite clear from July next year, that will be the beginning of the transition of the whole of Victoria, starting from North East Melbourne area, and then we will remain in that transition phase with different groups phasing into the scheme until July 2019. They will all be in, and at that point in time, the state will phase out most of the disability services that we currently fund, with that money going into the Commonwealth to go into the whole NDIS scheme. We do have other issues that we need to think from a state perspective. For example, there might be a very, very small number of people who actually are not eligible for the NDIS. And so currently, one of the pieces of work that we're working on is what we call the continuity of support. So for those people, they will maintain a responsibility to provide the services support that they currently receive. So we've got to work out how we're going to do that. The other piece of agreement, which probably don't get as much as I mentioned, is actually the HEC for the aged care bilateral agreement for the transitioning responsibility for aged care. So basically, services for older people will also be directly funded and managed by the Commonwealth government through the home support program and other current arrangements. So there will be some people that are over the age 65 who actually live in group homes. And even though the responsibility, say the funding responsibility, will move to the Commonwealth, but the we're not anticipating those people will need to move from where they are. So for older people, their responsibility for services will be a combination of home support program, but also if they're currently in receipt of specialist disability services, they will continue. And services for younger people will actually be funded and managed solely by the Victorian government until NDIS. And it is anticipated that by 2019, the younger people that who are using the aged care, they will all be by then, if they're eligible, to move on to NDIS. So there's actually quite a number of agreement in there that have to work through. The other one is also NDIS, apart from the traditional special disability services, it does also cover some of the mental health community-based services. So that come under the NDIS, not counting the acute mental health, like your hospital ward and those, but the community-based mental health services, they're also part of the in-scope of the NDIS. I think I probably should stop here and just see if there's any question and people want to ask.
Thanks, Noble. We've only got a couple minutes for questions. Noble Tabe is the Acting Director, NDIS Reform Branch at DHHS. So if you have a question, can you raise your hand and Fleur will come to you with the microphone.
Hi, Noble. You didn't mention advocacy. I'm not sure if you did that deliberately or not, but could you just explain how advocacy falls under the schedule in the bilateral agreement?
The short answer is yes and no in some way. at the moment, we're still going through an exercise that what they call is, in terms of some of those individual advocacy, the Commonwealth's interpretation is they should fall under the individualized package of the people. So if, say, I need to go and negotiate to get a package of services for myself, but I can't quite do it myself, so I need an advocate to support me, the Commonwealth interpretation is they will fall into that. I know, but there's two components. Then there is the more broader systematic advocacy, which are probably, not working on individual, but on a system level or state level. So those things currently is part of that discussion with the Commonwealth, what they call the IOC, which is Information Linkages. What's the C stand for? And Capacity Building, thank you. So that's some of the finer details that we're currently discussing with the Commonwealth. They acknowledge that there will be a component in there.
Okay, thank you. I might follow up with an email, because that didn't answer my question, but my car's in a towway, so I have to go.
Yep.
Thank you.
Yep.
Pauline Williams from AMIDA. I'm assuming if the rollout is happening in different regions at different times, does that mean that the DSR, the Disability Support Register, will continue to take applications up until the time that particular region becomes NDIS?
Okay. But also, remember I said we will also need to work out the logistics the most urgent people on the register statewide will move on the first 2 years. Yeah. So I suppose
statewide, so not regional.
No. So because the disability support register had a number of categories, and we have, I think, might not be the exact word, the most urgent one, and then the others. So the most urgent one in each of the area will move on in the first 2 years. Then when it comes to the geographic rollout, just like you get to NEMA, the first lot of people go will be the people on the DSR. So it depends on the time sequence. If you're in NEMA, the first layer, which is the most urgent statewide, they will progressively move on during the first 2 years. And then when they get to NEMA, if it is before that they move on to the most urgent, then it will come the rest on the DSR and then the people that who are on the already receiving services. So I suppose the lighter you are in the rollout sequence, the more chance that the most urgent people already onto NDIS. So it does work on, depends on the sequence of which point you're talking about. It is quite a logistic challenge to organize. But the concept is we want the people that who are most urgent get on it, and then when it comes to the area rollout, that will be the waiting list people, DSR people.
Does anyone have any more questions? Oh, you missed out, Pauline.
So our last question.
Andrew's Leadership Plus. My concern is that there's a confusion about advocacy as opposed to case management. What you've explained is case management, supporting the individual in working through developing a package and making sure that's happened. An advocate ensures that the rights are protected and there is social justice, and that needs to be made clear in terms of this whole process.
I concur with the comment. I think the Commonwealth need to understand that, you know, what they call, there's slightly different terminology being used. One of the things that they have is called the local area coordination, and they also got the planner. And then for existing people, case management got to straddle a bit of both. So if you like, their line of demarcation is, if it is about supporting the individual, it got to cover on the individual packages. But if it is across the whole system or across a geographic area, a large geographic area, then that's what they call the ILC. But you're absolutely right, and I think that's some of the things that individual participants need to be very clear as they, you know, move on to the scheme, because it's absolutely important what they actually get captured in their plan.
Thank you, Noble. Thank you, everybody. Noble Tabe is the Acting Director of NDIS Reform Branch at DHHS, and she was the guest of Michael Cromie, the Manager of Strategic Engagement in the Office for Disability at DHHS. So thank you very much for your presentation this afternoon and for your questions, everybody. That concludes our Advocacy Sector Conversations Forum for today. Two things before you go. Natasha has already emailed everyone who has registered to attend today an evaluation form for today, so please do take the time when you are at your email to complete the evaluation form. We really do rely on what you say in that evaluation, and it does inform our calendar of conversations forums for the coming year. Thank you so much for your participation today, and especially all the regionals who took the time to come here today. It's really amazing to see so many of you come today from all over Victoria. We do have quite a bit of food left over from lunch and afternoon tea. Honestly, grab some as you go out, put it in your pocket, put it in a napkin, because we don't want to have to, Natasha and I don't want to have to eat it all ourselves. Thank you so much, and we'll see you next time.